Welcome to MGO Podcast 5 point something. Who cares? Playing a lot of weird guys! Sorry. He said that at halftime at one of the games.
And
I've been saying that every 40 seconds since he said it. Tom Izzo, of course. Michigan defeats Michigan State by some to not quite as many.
79-70 is
thank
the final.
Thank you, Ace. That is Ace Anbar and Brian Cook. This is the MGO Block Podcast. Michigan has swept Michigan State for the second time in 4 years, won 6 of the last 8, sending Jordan Morgan out with quite a bang.
Indeed.
And now leads the Big Ten by a half game with 4 games left and a very manageable schedule down the stretch. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But first, the game where Michigan puts up 1.27 points per possession, which is completely nuts.
Yes.
Against the Michigan State team that had most of their pieces there on defense. I mean, Dawson is kind of a loss, but I mean, he's not.
They've still got guys there. Costello's a good interior defender. You know, you can't pin what Michigan just did on Brandon Dawson, except perhaps some of the Russell Bird things where Caris Levert just abused him for portions of the first half. But
well, the first half was Caris's because Michigan falls into another 10-point hole, which I'm getting a little tired of.
Yes. that is getting old.
I would kind of prefer Michigan runs out to a 20-point lead and then gives 10 back at the end, but whatever. So Caris really sparked Michigan in that kind of danger zone spot by taking it to the rack on Bird.
He's not good at basketball,
and he's just got this like. So instead of being good at basketball, he's gonna like curl his lip and try to be tough and stuff, and then like punch the basket when he gets totally pwned by Caris Levert.
And it's like that.
It's really fun when you win the game. If you don't win the game, it's like
how the hell did we lose to that guy?
To that guy, and then like so he goes off and like starts jawing at somebody in the first game, and in this game, Valentine comes off the bench to start barking at Horford. And it's just after both of those incidents, Michigan goes on like 10-0 runs. So continue.
So keep talking, State, and keep slapping the floor while you're at it. Because they did that to open the second half, and Michigan went on a 10-0 run.
They did. yes, we'll add that to the floor slap video, the easy layup for Stauskas.
Part two.
They only did it once, so they're catching on.
Yeah, slowly, really slowly.
Really slowly. But Caris was really good in the first half and
the second half.
Yeah, I mean he
was really good.
He was quite good at the basketball in this game, 3 of 5 from 3. I think he's pushed himself up at over 40% now, and that's kind of amazing because last year he was not a shooter.
Yeah, he's at 41% now.
41%. He's going up in Big Ten play.
That's remarkable.
So, and you know, he's has this tendency to over dribble, and there were a couple of bad possessions that kind of
some four shots in there.
Yeah, a little bit, but overall very efficient. He was 4 of 10 from 2 with a couple of shots that almost went down, and a lot of those were heavily contested, could have been fouls. You know,
and also on possessions where there wasn't really any other option except for him to put something up.
Right. He kind of got stuck with the late clock stuff in this game, and it kind of showed in the stats, but still a very efficient 23 points.
Yeah. And talk about a momentum shift. After Gary Harris gets an open shot to seemingly end the first half, all of a sudden Levert's wide open on the other end of the floor. They get the ball down to him. And after he puts the shot up, he's literally running towards the locker room before the ball hits the top of its trajectory as it goes in. And that a runoff 3-pointer to end the first half and cut the lead to 2.
Yeah, I mean,
it was huge, just not in terms of those 3 points, but just the momentum of the game heading into
the
second half.
Like that sequence separated by halftime where you get that 3 from and then the floor slap layup is shifts the game from 5 to dead even, and then it's on at that point. And then in the second half it was just Nick Stauskas.
Oh my god.
Doing ridiculous things.
Just step backs over everybody, especially Keith Appling.
Yeah, and they're kind of like off the dribble shots, which are less efficient in general. But against Michigan State, he's 8 of 11 from behind the arc. He was getting some back cuts. So one of the things that really was prominent to me is that Michigan took that week off they had, and they really seemed to spend that addressing all of the overplaying on the perimeter that opponents had provided. So you got a back cut game blouses dunk. You got a lot of passes under the hoop, and some of them didn't work out because they got a little bit too deep. But you got a couple of layups for Robinson. You got a Horford and Morgan some looks. And when they overplayed, it seemed like Michigan punished them.
Yeah, they did. I mean, the back cuts weren't limited to Stauskas. Robinson had a couple, although that's more his game. And you could tell that as the game went on, State's defenders were far less aggressive in their off-ball defense, both because the officials started calling it a little bit tighter in terms of the contact they were making off the ball, and they were getting back cut to death when they started playing over the top too much. So that was one of two brilliant adjustments, I thought, by John Beilein, the second being going to 1-3-1 in the second half.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we talk more about the defense. But you know, before this week, we were hoping that Michigan could find something that would allow them to return to the offensive efficiency that they had shown until the put your point guard on Stauskas era dawned.
Yes.
And I think we saw them do that. I mean, we hadn't seen them back cut this effectively pretty much the entire year.
No, that has not been a part of the offense nearly as much as it was today.
And, you know, Beilein kind of went back to his roots where it's just like, this is, I know this.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we do.
This is what West Virginia used to look like.
Right, yeah. And so incorporating that into the offense of the course of that week, hopefully we'll be able to extend over the next 2 weeks till the end of the regular season. And then Michigan goes back to that incredibly hard to defend unit that they were, and that allowed them to ignore the fact that their defense is kind of horrific.
Yes. And the one kind of positive that's come from this stretch where Stauskas has been, if not shut down, at least severely mitigated through a lot of these games, is that it has allowed Michigan to get some semblance of an offense going where they're not relying on him to spearhead it. And you see LeVert, a lot of his points in the first half came when Stauskas was on the bench, and that's happened a lot lately where Michigan is still able to generate an offense without Stauskas out there. And that was not the case in the beginning of the season at all.
Yeah, and then when he is out there, he's taken Gary Harris, he's taken the quickest defender away. So then you get things like, hey, it's Russell Bird against Caris LeVert, which goes poorly.
Yes. Michigan went at that every time it happened in the first half.
It didn't really matter who Bird was on, which is nice to see, because seeing them take advantage of that was good. And Robinson in this game struggled from the line, struggled from three, but was still 6-9 from two. With the kind of efficiency and the kind of output that you want to see him as the we throw it down kind of secondary option. So he really benefited from a lot of those back cuts, because you get him out of the basket, and he, unlike Jordan Morgan, he's got the athleticism to make sure that he can hit those reverse layups and not get it thrown back in the stands.
And he's got the hands to catch the entry pass cleanly, which is an issue with Michigan's big men a little bit.
Not that much this
year. Well, his ability to catch it and go up quickly is well beyond, I'd say, Michigan's other bigs. And you saw that. I mean, obviously there was the alley-oop, which was insane, where he reached 3 feet behind his head and threw it down. But
my favorite thing is when he catches an alley-oop and then he's still going up.
Yes. Like, I thought Chrysler was going to crumble after he threw that down, but there wasn't just that. There was a pass that he caught pretty much directly under the basket and was able to just go up and reverse it kind of behind his head, and that's just a skill play and a finishing play that it's tough for a center to make, and is something that he does a little bit better.
Yeah, because he has a increased skill level and the athleticism to make that a shorter shot, because he can jump higher than Morgan can get up. And then, of course, he had the back cut off the really impressive Walton drive and dish.
Yes, which that pass was nuts.
Yeah, that was if Walton can do that a little bit more consistently. We've seen him really emerge, and then Wisconsin game, major setback from both him and Irvin. But Michigan finally got Glenn Robinson involved in a way that wasn't really asking him to dribble very much.
Yes.
So he had an and-one opportunity against Bird that he attacked. And, you know, you're going to see that once or twice per game. But I think the key for Michigan and Robinson is getting him those, you know, 6 to 8 shots where he doesn't have to put the ball on the floor.
Yeah, and the big thing about that and one opportunity against Bird was that Robinson caught that ball while he was already moving towards the basket. He wasn't starting from a standstill. And I think it's really key for him to get the ball when he's got some momentum going, even if it's on the perimeter where he gets a running start, because
He's not going to beat anyone.
He's not going off the dribble. So if he can get that momentum where he doesn't need a blow by move and he's just got that his momentum going that direction, that's what made that play happen.
Yeah, and so I mean, Michigan kicks this game off with Robinson taking a longish contested 2-point jumper, which doesn't go in, and you know,
bad feels all around.
Yeah, but they did successfully incorporate him like Trey Burke incorporated him last year. So if Michigan can continue doing that, I think that's a real good sign going into turning time.
Absolutely. And, I mean, he did get open outside shots. They didn't fall, but they were open.
Yeah, they were bricks, though.
There were some ugly bricks in this game.
There were a lot of – yeah. Michigan threw up some crazy bricks and still put up almost 1.3 points of possession.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there were some
– there was a very feast or famine type game because it was either – you know, this is the best shot in basketball, a dunk, or it was like, oh, what is that? But it all worked out. I guess we should talk about the defense, which good and bad. I mean, they force Michigan State to take more three-pointers than two-pointers before the very end of the game, where Michigan is just playing no threes defense. So that was 21 threes versus 22s. And against a team like Michigan State, I'll take that. I mean, especially –
I mean, Gary Harris is kind of their main three-point threat, and or not their main three-point threat, but the volume guy. And other than that, there's not a shooter out there who gets regular minutes who scares you that much.
Well, I mean, Trice is a decent shooter, but he's so bad in every other aspect of the game that, like, having him out there, you're not really worried about having him around.
No, I mean, when he was out there in the first half when Appling had two fouls, Michigan put Spike out there, got the offense going, went on a 10-0 run, and that was a lot of that had to do with just Trice being out there because you could leave Spike on him and not worry about it.
But hey, Harris has been up and down. He's not a great three-point shooter this year. He's 4-13 in this game. Yeah. And, you know, that's where you want to keep Michigan State because their DNA as a team is they're going to put it inside. And I don't think they posted up Payne successfully one time in this game.
No, and that was in the beginning of the game. I really don't know why they didn't do that. They had a man up on Morgan and Horford, and they just weren't really posting him up.
I mean, they were trying to post him up, but I didn't think that there was a point at which Morgan and Horford offered up a good entry pass angle for anybody. I thought they did a great job just denying him.
And Michigan's length on defense makes entry passes difficult, too, on the perimeter. That helps. And then in the second half, Beeline's master stroke of this game was switching to the 1-3-1 when Morgan and Horford got into foul trouble, which allowed them to not have to be on Payne while still denying the post entry.
It bought them the 2-3 minutes that they really needed when they were both at four fouls at like 8 minutes left in the game, and you're like,
We don't want to stare down Max Bielefeld coming into a tight game at the end here.
Right. And so they only needed to do it for the two or three possessions that they did, and they got hit with a 3-pointer on one of them, but the other two possessions were pretty ugly for State.
Yeah, I believe they first forced a turnover in at least one and made things difficult and didn't let them get the ball to Payne.
And they forced 13 turnovers in this game, which is a decent number for them. They basically hold Michigan State off the board. So both teams had 7 offensive rebounds in this game. Michigan had more opportunities to get offensive rebounds, so State did win the board war. But 7-7 in terms of second chance opportunities, I'll take that.
Absolutely, against State.
So that's the good news. The bad news is that Michigan State was 17 of 25 from two, which is actually a little bit better than it sounds because at the end of the game they were going inside and they got 3 or 4 buckets on.
And Michigan wasn't even trying.
Right, they were just playing no threes and they didn't really even care. So, but even so, I mean, that's kind of a lot of 2-point shooting there.
It is.
It's not the best.
And only a couple of those were really kind of things where you throw up your hands and go, well, that's just going to happen. Like,
well,
there was one Matt Costello post-up bucket where you're just like, okay, that's if he's going to make that, he's going to make it.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well.
But there were a couple ones, Payne driving through where he wasn't really meeting much resistance. And
no, except after he had thrown the ball down and screamed, which
one kind of infuriating part of the first half was Michigan's inability to foul an open shooter near the basket without actually preventing him from getting the ball up to the rim, which was a problem.
Like, some of these fouls were actually happening as the ball was already gone through the rim. I was like, you either got to let that guy go or, like, I don't know.
Yeah, Irvin was really late on a rotation on one of those and committed a foul right into the basket. It was just like you got to give that up.
Yeah, you just got to, like, be my bad dudes.
I'd say the shooting numbers weren't as bad as they look on paper, given that Denzel Valentine was raining in threes in the first half. And that is just not something that should ever happen.
Like, he pulled up from, what, 30 feet against...
on a rainbow. Just
and I'm just like...
that thing almost hit the freaking Jumbotron and it comes down and goes right through. I was a little beside myself at that particular moment.
When disgruntled, Michigan State fans call him Tragic Johnson, which is amazing.
Incredible.
It's amazing.
And he did have, I believe one of his passes made it into the Michigan State bench. So that was fun.
Yeah, he's a fun guy. Speaking of passes in the bench, Michigan, like, if there's one stat that allowed Michigan to win this game, it is three turnovers.
Yes.
And we can actually enumerate all three because there were only three and we remember them. There was a shot clock violation in the first half. And then 20 minutes of game time elapse.
It's ridiculous.
Before Stauskas throws one into the bench, and he had an open guy under the bucket that they were about to hit for another backdoor type layup. And they cut to John Beilein. And John Beilein just smiles because he is like, well, that's number two. You know, with 30 minutes gone in a game against a very aggressive, very physical defense. And then the third one was more unfortunate than dangerous because Michigan had blown the game open and they'd gotten a run out. And,
like a 4-on-1.
Yes. And Chrysler was about to explode and Stauskas threw it, I think, directly to Appling, which was the only steal.
He came back and undercut. It was a pretty nice play.
Yeah. But
not the greatest pass. But
those were the three turnovers.
Yeah.
And that's why Michigan had a shot advantage in this game after a couple of tough losses in which they were operating at, I think, an 11-shot deficit against Wisconsin. So they returned to, you know, having that shot advantage that was really an issue.
Yeah. I mean, there's a 6-point gap here in effective field goal percentage, and Michigan still outscored State on a points per possession basis.
By a significant margin. Yeah. So, I mean, if that's what it's going to take, then wow. I mean, you can kind of live with some of the bad shots because other teams aren't even getting those shots up. They're just putting him somewhere else. So
no, that was just extra. I mean, 10 extra possessions off a turnover.
Yeah, and they were disruptive enough on defense to actually force some turnovers out of the opponent, which did not happen in the Wisconsin game. I think Wisconsin had two turnovers in that game. So it's really tough to win when your opponent it just isn't turning the ball over at all. So I think that's something that we just kind of have to live with when we're talking about Michigan's defense, which has always been pretty passive.
Yes.
And now we should talk about the referees.
Oh, boy.
So there was the makeup call sequence in this game where the Morgan sets up for – and he's just dead set.
For an eternity.
And gets run over by Appling. And, of course, he gets called for a block because he's Jordan Morgan. And it doesn't matter how many goddamn years Jordan Morgan has been in this league. He will never get respect from the referees. And, you know, Morgan goes nuts. Beilein goes nuts. And – about 2 seconds into the ensuing offensive possession for Michigan State, Gavin Schilling gets called for a moving screen.
For just the first possible opportunity that the officials had to blow
just
a whistle.
For a rush. And then, you know, the TV cuts to Tom Izzo. And even though Tom Izzo was literally blocking Stauskas' path to the basket at points during this game, Tom Izzo did a pretty cool thing by like being like, so that makes us even, right? Like,
yeah. there was mutual acknowledgement between the coaches that things kind of shook out there.
Just man,
it was bad. The double foul.
Oh god!
Just so.
Looking at it, and you're like, "What was that even for?" Like the ball wasn't even inbounded. Just like talk to him, you know, or I don't know, ignore them because they're just playing basketball. It was completely insane. And honestly, at the time, I was like, "I'll take that," because I'd rather have a foul on Payne than a foul on Horford than not have both of those things.
And then we, as the game progressed, it got
really
a little hairy, but
especially because Morgan took another textbook charge.
Yep.
Which turned into a 3-point play for Michigan State. And it's just, you know, there are charges and blocks that could go either way. And you're like, well, I guess I disagree with that call, but that's understandable. That other one was unbelievable. It was off an offensive rebound. And as soon as Morgan saw that the guy had got the offensive rebound, he stood stock still with his arms straight up. And it's just like, you have got to be kidding me. I don't know, man. I think they just ruined the charge. Like the charge was a controversial call and a lot of times previously, and they just made it worse because
Nobody has any idea.
No, and I mean, you got Jim Boeheim just going ape because he's not getting a call that Duke just got. And I think that, you know, I understand why Boeheim did that. I mean,
yeah, that was one of the more justifiable freakouts I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, it's just impossible to call. And, you know, these guys aren't getting any more competent. So you have to, like, make the rule easier or something. I mean,
yeah, because it's something that teams can just, especially at the end of games, just take advantage of, is just go barreling towards the basket. And even if somebody takes a legitimate charge on you, there's a darn good chance the call's going your way anyway.
Yeah, and it's just so unclear to me when a guy sliding with his checker, that's not correct. A guy sliding with the guy who has the ball, like what space is his and what space is the guy with the ball? And I don't think the refs know either, because there was a foul on Kaminsky that led to free throws for Michigan that I was like, how is that a foul?
Yeah,
like,
but no, we should be clear here. The calls are bad both ways.
Yeah, it's just you watch a basketball game and it's just you have no idea what is a foul and what isn't a foul. And it's just boggling.
Yeah, in this game they were lucky it didn't affect the outcome, but there were some calls that just made you put your head in your hands.
Yeah, at least in this one, it seemed like it was relatively even both ways. I mean, there were the first 5 minutes, I was getting pretty frustrated because you were getting, like, there was a possession where LeVert had the ball with about 8 seconds left, and Valentine's hands were all over him, and they didn't call it, and Michigan gets a horrible shot off, and it's just like, we've tried to tighten this up. And then after the first 5 minutes, you know, there was a bump under the basket where Glenn Robinson got bumped off as a cutter.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I guess, set a new tone. And then Applin gets 2 fouls, and it's like, hey, this looks like a basketball game now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if people were sending me screenshots early on of these scratches on Nick Stauskas's arm from apparently an early attempt to get himself free off the ball. And I wouldn't be surprised if Beeline went over and said something to the officials and maybe showed them Stauskas's arm early on, because it seemed like there was something in there that where the officials changed the way they were calling off-ball movement and tightening it up significantly. And that played very much into Michigan's advantage.
I mean, I still think those guys just need to start plowing directly into defenders.
Yeah, who are including Izzo, by the way.
Oh, God. When is some Michigan player going to put Izzo on the bench and wave his finger at his face?
Stauskas had an opportunity to do that 6 different times in the first half. And I was really hoping for it.
There was one point at which Izzo, I mean, State's on defense in the first half, and Izzo's on the court, and one of the referees has to, like, push him back.
That happened multiple, because I started keeping an eye on it. That happened both when State was on offense too. The officials would have to, just so they could establish their own position,
right? Yeah,
literally box out Tom Izzo to get him back onto the sideline.
When is it going to happen? It's got to happen someday.
Does Amadou Ba have extra? Does he have extra eligibility?
If Stauskas just plows into Izzo when he's on the court, that's got to be a technical on Izzo.
It is by the letter of the law. That's a technical on Izzo.
I mean, somebody's got to coach these guys up to be like, if Izzo's on the court, just run him over.
I mean, I would like to see Jordan Morgan literally line up and set a pick on Tom Izzo.
Oh, God.
And then have Stauskas bash into it.
Yeah.
Let's blow this whole thing up.
Get this guy off the court. That's what I'm saying. Off the court.
Yeah. Like Kalen Lucas, get the F off our court.
Exactly. Oh. Exactly. I'm now holding the paper upside down. That's how excited I am. All right. So we should look at the road ahead for both of the teams that are currently in contention for the Big Ten title. Michigan State has the advantage of only having 3 more games, and 2 of them are at home. But they have a much tougher schedule, according to KenPom. Despite that, Illinois at home should be a gimme. And then they have a home game against Iowa and a road game against Ohio State. Either of which is extremely losable for a team that just went to Nebraska at home.
Yes.
So that's tough. KenPom gives them a 16% chance of winning out for that. Michigan has at Purdue, a home game against Minnesota, at Illinois, and a home game against Indiana. KenPom gives them a 35% shot at winning out. And, of course, if they drop one, they are still in position to share a Big Ten title at the very least. So I would say that Michigan's chance of hanging a banner this year is well above 50% now.
Yeah, it's quite strong, it looks like, at this point, especially with Iowa losing to Wisconsin and kind of eliminating any worry about a team coming up and passing Michigan to Michigan State.
Yeah, at that point, that it became clear that it was a two-team race, and it would take a massive meltdown from both teams to get either Iowa or Wisconsin
In, yeah, they're now, I think Wisconsin actually is in third technically.
Yeah, they're 9-5. So they have resurrected themselves from a pretty ugly sequence in there. And now the conference actually kind of looks normal. Now it's not just this pile of mediocrity behind the two teams that are undefeated. So it actually looks like a Big Ten instead of a whatever that was.
Yeah, and like we expected, teams came back to earth after going out to some strong starts where we were looking at teams potentially finishing with one or two losses in a conference that should not let that happen.
No, should not let that happen. But, I mean, Michigan has a shot at making it to 15-3, which would be unbelievable, and even 14-4 is a guaranteed share. So, you know, none of these teams are completely incapable of beating Michigan, except maybe Illinois, which just hasn't been able to do anything all year.
Yeah, and we should bring up the Penn State game from last year, as they never take anything as a guarantee. Although at home, this is you know.
Well, it's at Illinois, so
that's yeah. You're so right. I was looking at state schedule.
The two tougher games are actually at home, which is probably good.
Yes,
because you know Minnesota's going to go to the tournament. Indiana did beat Michigan at Assembly Hall because of Yogi Ferrell's business. I don't know how into that game Indiana is going to be because they're obviously out of the tournament.
Yeah,
playing for a person they hate.
Playing for a person everybody hates. Let's be fair to Tom Crean and Indiana's players.
James Blackman, why did you do it? So I'm just shocked, honestly. I mean, Coach of the Year, right? Well, Tim Miles.
Yeah, it's Tim Miles. And then
Beilein in a landslide. I mean, although Michigan State is playing a lot of weird guys. I made it a lot longer than 40 seconds this time. They put up the injury thing, and one of the things on the injury thing was Kenny Kaminsky getting suspended for academics. And the other thing was Travis Trice's foot blisters. And
wait, they still got that graphic going?
It wasn't like the full graphic, but they had like a list of missed games this year. So like Costello missed four games with mono, and just, you know what? If you miss four games, you did not have mono. You know?
Yeah.
You missed like half a year.
Yeah, like the mildest case of mono ever.
And they list Dawson on there when it's like, you know what? That's his fault.
Yeah. that was not an in-game contact injury.
Yeah. And I was about to say, and it was probably not actually what they said, but then I remembered that he admitted that Dan Dockett had trolled him into breaking his hand. So obviously that's true, because who could make that up? It's like Prince kicking your ass. So got anything else here?
I'm still getting over the Robinson alley-oop at this point. I'm both in terms of my just ability to think and my ability to hear.
Still going up.
He's somewhere floating above Ypsilanti right now.
I'm terribly impressed with your ability to like tweet during these games. Like I couldn't say anything during the first half because I was just like, I can't say anything.
I think I have to, or I start thinking about the game and getting nervous.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a nice outlet, and then it turns into insanity when I get nervous anyway towards the end of the game. And I start screaming.
There's just a point where I know that anything I write down I will immediately regret. Like, that was the entire first half of the Wisconsin game, was me like typing about half of a tweet and then going no, and deleting it. But they have recovered. We should probably not talk about the Wisconsin game.
No, I don't see a reason to do that right now. I don't see one at all.
But we will take a break, and we will come back, and we'll talk about weird things happening in the football program.
Yeah.
You know, they call them killer whales, but you seem surprised when it bends you down to the bottom of the tank where you can't turn around. It took half your leg and both your lungs. When I crave, I eat hearts of sharks. I know you know it. I'm a man, 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 man eater. But still, you're surprised, prize, prize when I eat you.
Yes. So, I have to admit that the weird things that have happened in the football program are giving me the heebie-jeebies a little bit.
Yeah, this isn't the all change is good change in the offseason type of thing?
I mean, that's what people say, but if you look at it, you've switched around basically every defensive responsibility on the roster. You've given Roy Manning the cornerbacks, which he's never coached before. He's never played cornerback before.
Yeah.
I'm not totally enthused about that move. You've got Madison, the linebackers, and he's mostly a defensive line coach. You've got a lessening – you got Mark Smith back to the defensive line, and it's just like,
oh, at least he has experience there.
Yeah, but at some point it's just like, you know, if something's not working right, you should be replacing guys instead of just shuffling around deck chairs.
Yeah. The one thing I think made a little bit of sense in this is that with how much Michigan has had to play nickel and how the defensive backfield positions have kind of become almost four or five different ones, where the boundary corner and field corner are different, the nickel's different, and then the two safety spots are kind of strangely the ones that are most similar to each other.
Yeah.
You had Kurt Mallory kind of in charge of five out of the 11 guys on the defense a lot of times on the field last year. And so breaking up that responsibility and maybe lessening the burden on him, hopefully that makes it so that the defensive coaching is better, but that's kind of grasping at straws.
Yeah, that's the theory. I'm not sure how much I buy it. And unlike, say, a wide receivers coach or a running backs coach who can just recruit, every position on the defense really does need a ton of technique coaching.
Yeah, you don't have a running backs coach equivalent on the defensive right. side of the ball.
And then the other thing that kind of makes me nervous is the fact that they're moving Jake Ryan to middle linebacker.
Yeah, which is completely nuts. Hell out of me. I don't get it.
That position is completely different from Sam. So you have to read, run, or pass, which Jake Ryan has never done. And everybody knows we love ourselves some Jake Ryan, but it does not seem to be in his wheelhouse to not be a vertical attacker and to like figure out what's going on and then react appropriately quickly enough to do something about it.
Yeah. And not only that, but you're taking the guy who's proven himself to be Michigan's best pass rusher and taking him away from a pass rush position
right.
when the defensive line for the entire time Greg Madison has been here has not been able to generate a pass rush on their own.
Right. And if you've got Frank Clark as a senior who's already 280 pounds, you can put Jake Ryan with his hand down as a weak side defensive end on a nickel and have Frank Clark as the strong side guy.
Yeah.
So he's got a spot against spread offenses, and it's a spot that Michigan needs to fill with an effective player. And when he's not going up against a spread offense, then he can play his Sam spot. So I just don't think it's going to work out. And the other thing is that you've got a two deep that is all returning. And honestly, Desmond Morgan was probably their best linebacker last year.
Yeah, I just don't get why there needs to be change at inside linebacker when those two guys are pretty solid.
I mean, people are kind of disappointed in the way Ross played, but Ross was in a tough spot last year because the defensive line was simply not good enough because you didn't have Quentin Washington in there for large stretches for whatever reason, and you had, you know, a glorified defensive end playing nose tackle after Pipkins goes down.
There wasn't a lot keeping him clean.
Right, so these guys weren't kept clean and play suffered, but that's on the defensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing that Michigan can do about that, and Jake Ryan is not going to be helpful there. So that's just another thing that's just like, man, that creates a hole at Sam, which
a huge hole at Sam
is very difficult.
Unless they're just doing away with that position entirely and basically just having nickel be their base defense.
They could be doing that. I mean, they could be going with like a Ross type or a Wangler type out there.
It still seems like, I mean, I'm glad they're trying to adjust for spread offenses, but this seems like kind of a weird way to adjust to it.
It seems desperate.
It does.
So that's heebie-jeebie number two. And then number three is, so Chris Bryant has taken a medical and he's done.
Yes.
And if you look at this roster, there are two or three other players who either could have been told that they're never going to play at Michigan and should consider whether they want to continue at Michigan or have their career somewhere else. Not kick them out, but just be blunt. And then there's like one or two fifth years as well who you could say, well, we don't think you're going to play. You have a degree, have a nice career. So Michigan's 16-man recruiting class is not just one person short. It's three or four people short. And while the number of kids in the class who are highly rated is good and the star ratio is good, you can't just say that that's as successful as the class was if they literally only had 16 spots instead of 19 to 20. So we mentioned this on the signing day podcast, and it's only become more clear with Chris Bryant's departure because they knew about that before signing day.
Yeah.
And just sort of the toxic air around the program has prevented them from acquiring anybody since August.
Yeah.
So it might change this weekend because you got some guys coming in, and Brandon was told by, oh God, this is going to be a name that is going to be difficult for me to pronounce. Theo Lucchese.
Theo Lucchese, something
well,
like that.
We'll figure it out if and when he commits. 2016 offensive lineman at Traverse City, who's pretty highly touted, said that he would probably drop. So
yes.
Still not a 2015 guy, but, you know, maybe a little bit of momentum.
Yeah, some recruiting action going on.
Thanks to the basketball team.
Yes.
So I am feeling nervous about all of these things.
Yeah. I mean, the recruiting stuff is a little worrisome because they haven't gotten off to the start in 2015 that they did.
That they thought they had.
That they thought they had or that they did in 2014. You know, by right around this time last year, I was dying.
You haven't written a hello post in 6 months.
Yeah, which feels just weird. I mean,
it is weird.
And, you know, Michigan just moved Keith Heitzman to tight end. Now they caught a tough break there with Jake Butt tearing his ACL, but when you're making those kind of depth moves.
See,
that
one doesn't really bother me because Heitzman had been passed over at the strong side.
No, I'm just saying, you know, if you're taking your full allotment of guys, especially since Bunting, you're not even sure whether or not that guy's going to be a tight end.
Right, and you definitely know that he's not going to be a tight end in year one because you're going to redshirt the guy.
That's something that you maybe could fill in.
Well, it's just that every recruit is a lottery ticket, right? And if you're not filling up your allotment of lottery tickets, you might be missing out on a very good player.
Yeah.
So, and then when you have Michigan's redshirt philosophy, that just compounds things because instead of a Wisconsin or Michigan State where they're hanging on to these guys as long as possible, because when you take fewer guys, you need to hit on more of them and you want to find out if you have a hit with all these guys in case you have a fifth year with them. So
instead, we've got Andre Pipkins entering his junior year, having played a few meaningful snaps and losing a season. And now he's got a year of kind of recovery and then one season to show that he was really the five-star guy we brought him in as.
Right. So all of these things make me a little bit I'm not happy with the news coming out right now, I guess. And obviously, it's not a huge deal or anything, but, you know.
It would be nice for them to be maximizing the available scholarships, considering teams do more than that and elsewhere. And
yeah, we're just asking them to get up to 85. Like,
if you want to win, at least use the resources you have available.
Yep, but that's our complaint. And while we're complaining, students lining up before the approved 7 a.m. time were threatened.
5 a.m.? It wasn't even 7. It was 5.
We're threatened with arrest by U of M police because everything the athletic department does in terms of public relations is wrong. I mean, amazing.
Unbelievable. And, you know, it's I walked into Chrysler about an hour before tip-off today, and the students had already filled up probably 6 sections by that point. I mean, there was a massive student turnout for this game, which is one of the reasons why it was way louder than most Michigan games. The turnout was just huge. But they were all in the upper bowl for the most part. I mean, it was still just that small sliver of Maze Rage and then the one overflow. But
I don't necessarily blame Brandon for that because when you did the renovations.
But he also booted student season ticket. There was a whole reconfiguration that they could have done that could have included more students being down in the lower bowl. It's just these things keep adding on to each other, and they're all giving the students the kind of the short end.
Yeah,
and
they should at least be in both end zones of the lower bowl.
Yeah, I mean, just for free throw distractions.
Free throw distractions, and those seats are not actually any good.
No, they're not. They're crap. It's not something as a season ticket holder that you'd be holding on to too dearly.
Right.
I just don't get it, and I feel genuinely bad for the students because they have been between the football stuff and how it's been handled and this. I mean, they pretty much universally hate Dave Brandon, and while that's kind of just a rational thing to do, I think it's not a good sign when your athletic director can't even keep the people who aren't paying that much for the tickets happy. I mean, those are the one group whose prices are relatively sane for going to these games, and they're still pissed off about everything.
Yeah, and there need to be ways in which you can achieve a detente with these students so that they are doing what their job is, which is to show up and be loud on time and to not turn them off and further exacerbate ticket issues that might come up 10, 20 years down the road.
And kind of building off of that, in the lead up to the game, I can't remember who tweeted this out, but someone mentioned that Michigan just really doesn't know how to build up the pregame hype. Did take advantage of the fact that there are people in there an hour before tip-off, yeah, and they're excited.
There were just ads on the scoreboard.
It was an hour of advertisements. I mean, quite literally just a loop of every athletic department produced video you could think of that's been played all year. And they could have done, you know, they could have been playing the Michigan State game from earlier this season. They could have played last year's version. They could have played just about anything. They could have played music. They could have had the band down there.
Kansas highlights.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things that you can show to get that place raucous at tip-off. Yeah. And instead, they waited until 5 minutes before tip, had the dance team come out there with the drum line and do a short thing and tried to get everybody going from 0 to 60 in, you know, no time.
Even more than just the hype-up thing, like the experience of going to that game after you had been fed an hour of the last 8 games against Michigan State about Trey Burke on the tourney run, I mean, that gets into you more.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm speaking from a person who has created a cult, right? Like, I am a Michigan cult creator, so I think I'm actually pretty well established as how to do this. And the way you do it is by thinking about what I would want, you know?
Yeah, and I know as the students, you could tell that there was a bit of deflation because they're, I mean, it's an exciting thing to line up for a big game early, get there, you make a whole day out of it, and then all of a sudden you're standing around for 60 minutes watching advertisements, and that just that just takes a lot away from the whole experience. Yeah. And you could tell it took a while for them to kind of warm up to the point where, especially since the state jumped out to a lead, you know, it was surprisingly quiet in there for a while until Michigan started making a run, and it really didn't start reaching the point that you'd expect it to be for a game of that magnitude until Levert's three at the very end of the first half.
So to sum up, this is a athletic department that expects loyalty. It does not attempt to create it.
Absolutely.
We can even bitch about stuff after that game. We're experts,
we're
amazing.
Still very happy though. Overall.
Still very happy, but we put it way back at the end because there are things that need to be addressed because addressing things is good. Otherwise, they will not be addressed. And we've addressed things. I think we're done.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. Russell Bird, please continue talking as long as you want to continue talking, and never stop talking, actually. Just keep talking, man. Keep talking.
Denzel, too.
Game. Blouses.